people should be able to call detox, get into detox, and then immediately get into a treatment program, right? Because I mean, that just makes sense, right? I think anyhow, you know, I mean, how does it make sense to call detox, get turned away?
You're listening to Rat Race, stories of addiction and recovery with your host, Jody and AZ. I feel like I haven't seen you, like physically seen you in like weeks. Why does it feel that way?
Yeah, man, I don't know. We've both been pretty busy, and that's okay. But I'm really glad to be sitting here with you again today and looking forward to having some good conversation here. I know we're talking about having our first guest on today, but we had to postpone that by 1 week. But I'm really looking forward to next Sunday because we're going to finally bring on our first of many guests. So I'm pretty pumped about that too, AZ. And yeah, it's nice to see you in person, man.
We have some minor tweaks to make to our studio here at Howl at the Moon. It's a mobile studio. We can take it down, put it back up on demand. But once we get that tweak in place, yes, there will be a guest. So that's what we're waiting on right now.
It's exciting. I'm really looking forward to it. I know there's a bunch of people who have expressed interest in coming on our podcast. And I know up until now, it's just been you and I chatting back and forth, which has been super cool. But I'm really looking forward to bringing some people on and having them share their stories and have us ask some questions and just have some great conversations. And having said that, we definitely have some people lined up who are interested in coming on the show. But if we have listeners out there who might be interested in sharing their stories, I'd encourage them to reach out to AZ or myself as well. And we can look at maybe getting you on and interviewing you on the podcast here.
Absolutely. And another way to reach out is not only our website, ratracepodcast.com. We have a Facebook page, ratracepodcast.com. And there's Howl at the Moon Cafe in Thunder Bay, Ontario's Facebook page as well. There's a message section there that anyone can reach out.
Definitely, definitely. Or people can always message us personally too on our Facebook accounts. So lots of ways to get in touch with us. And yeah, I really am an advocate of people healing out loud and sharing those stories. It's really beneficial from my standpoint to hear other people's journeys and stories. And I think a lot of other people are looking forward to hearing some people open up and share as well.
Yeah, definitely. And it was interesting because just a few days ago, I was reading an article on stigmatism and how people in society look towards someone that might have a drinking problem. And that stigma, it's a burden in society. It's looked down upon. I got interested in it and I looked up the word stigma to see if I know my definition of stigma, but whenever I look these things up, something else pops up. And I came across it being the ancient Greek word meaning shame or disgrace, previously used for slaves and criminals, and now used as a sign of socially undesirable, like towards alcoholism. It was right there.
Yep.
And the more I read this article, it put the addiction of alcohol in, it categorized it to me in two categories that I really thought of before. One was it's a lifestyle choice. Someone is excessively drinking alcohol because they choose to do. And then the other one is a medical condition, something that's an actual disorder and they need it genetically. They need it to function because they have tremors or something, or it's a medical thing. And that medical thing is very complex that I only understand it in myself, but I can't understand what the medical reason for someone else drinking would be. But when someone said that, and I'm like, you know what? That is really true, because I know folks that have stopped completely without going to meetings or getting help or going to rehab. And then I thought, I'm like, maybe that was a lifestyle choice. They could just stop. And then I have others that try hard to stop, but they can't do it. And it's almost like it's a medical disorder. And so, you know, it got me thinking.
Yeah, that's interesting conversation pieces there. And I certainly have seen people who aren't able to stop and they want to stop, but literally like there are complications physically that could possibly happen if they do stop, and including all sorts of symptoms that come along with withdrawal, up into and including death possibly. So that's why I always encourage people who have been drinking for a long time to detox safely. That's what came to my mind as we were talking about that. We have a detox center here in Thunder Bay at Balmoral, but there aren't very many beds there. And I know that people run a real risk if they try and detox on their own sometimes, especially if they're chronic alcoholics. There could be severe complications. So I think it's really important when people come to that decision that they want to slow down or stop, that they really look at a safe way of detoxing, whether that's going to the hospital or checking into a detox center. The problem is here in Thunder Bay with the detox center is that there really are only a handful of beds. And I've seen over and over here in Thunder Bay, Z, where people are ready, and they've even come into Health the Moon, and they've asked to use our phone, and they're ready to box, you know, they want to get in there. And that's the thing, eh? Like, we really need more resources, because people, when they're ready, they're ready. And when they're told that they can't get in, it can be really frustrating. And a lot of people just say, screw it, I might as well just go back to drinking. Like, I can't even get the help when I'm looking for it. And I've seen it time and time again here in Thunder Bay, AZ, where people have called detox and they're told, call back in 3 hours, call back in 5 hours, call back tomorrow, call back the next day. And this goes on for days at a time sometimes. So it's really tough. And like I said, like, the detoxing safely is a really important part of getting off of the alcohol, because there are like consequences that can happen. Like, people can have seizures, for example. Like, people can actually die from acute alcohol withdrawal. So that's really tough. And we don't have the resources here in Thunder Bay. And I know it's a little off topic from where we started. But yeah, I thought I'd just mention that as well.
That's important stuff, because it does tie into what we're talking about today around the whole stigma thing as well. I'm curious to know why people can't get a bed when they need it, when they make the call. That's one of the questions that I have. And one thing I can think of is, I have health professionals in the field, and there's this whole look at, okay, does this person drinking because of a lifestyle choice, or is this person drinking because it's a medical disorder? And oftentimes the health professionals may not know that answer. And I'm curious to know is, why can't, when they're calling, why aren't they getting a bed?
I think it's just, it comes down to the fact that there just aren't the beds available. It's not that people are being turned away because detox doesn't want to detox them, but they've only got a limited amount of capacity. And we've got such a huge crisis here in Thunder Bay that the capacity at the detox center here in the city has outgrown the demand. And this doesn't happen once in a while. Like, I've seen it over and over again where people have been calling and they've been turned away and told to call back. To me, that says that we need more resources. We need a bigger facility. We need more beds, because we have this massive problem here in Thunder Bay. And I'm sure other cities across Canada and probably around the world are dealing with this too. And we really need to, I think, start looking at meeting the demand and getting the resources that people need. But it goes much further than just detox. Like, it really goes further than that, because even getting into treatment programs here in Thunder Bay, like, a lot of times there's a wait list. People have to wait, so they're ready. What do they do between the time that they detox and they get into treatment? There's a lot of just free time there between those two dates. And a lot of times people end up just getting into that cycle of relapse. I think that we just need more resources across the board, because, you know, people need, like, the process really should be like this, right? People should be able to call detox, get into detox, and then immediately get into a treatment program, right? Because, I mean, that just makes sense, right? I think, anyhow, you know, I mean, how does it make sense to call detox, get turned away, you know, get told to call back, finally get into detox, get detoxed, and then apply for treatment, and they tell you, yeah, like, you've got a 4-month wait until you can get into a treatment program. Yeah. You know, to me, that just seems, what's the point, right? And then it doesn't even end with the treatment centers, right? And then, like, we're lacking resources for aftercare too in this city. And I'm sure it's not just Thunder Bay. People get out of treatment and we don't have the resources to provide the aftercare that they need in a lot of situations. It's really tough. And I think we're really facing some challenges here with some of the issues that we're dealing with.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. It's across the board. It's in the country. It's not just Thunder Bay. And people find themselves waiting to get in. I know friends that go in and they'll go in for detox. They'll get into the program, but like a few weeks in, they're already like, they're drinking. They feel they got it. They're back out. It's like a safe haven. It's a bed for them to get a meal. But when you look at their track record, they've been doing this in and out for the last 10 years.
Right.
So I always wonder from like the whole, like from the healthcare point of view, when they're sitting there, when they're doing these assessments, okay, is this his lifestyle, or does this guy actually have a problem? And so that's something that's running through my mind lately around this. And I do agree with you to several points that you mentioned that, yeah, we do need more infrastructure. We need more beds, but we also need quality staff to actually do this. There's no point bringing in more if it's just a hall full of people wanting to pass some time and get back out into the jungle. It's another reason to do that. It's another reason to be like, okay, here's some beds, here's some resources. Bringing them in, giving them food, shelter, and detox, and a bed to sleep on is just like one leg of a 10-legged table.
Definitely.
Where's the other 9 legs?
Yeah.
Because to me, it's all about sustainability once you're back out in the jungle on the streets. High risk Thunder Bay, high risk Winnipeg, wherever you are in Canada or in the world, do you have the resources and tools to move forward strong?
Yeah.
And that's the way I look at it too. Is that there's a lot more that still needs to be done.
Yeah, totally. And I know that we've started this conversation talking about stigma, and there is a lot of stigma out there in the community. I mean, like people who maybe have never struggled with an addiction or don't know people who are addicted often tend to judge people who are struggling with those addictions. When a lot of times it seems like the city of Thunder Bay in general would just as soon brush the addiction issue under the rug or just pretend like it doesn't exist. There's a lot of stigma. And I think that's really unfortunate because these are really good people who are struggling with these addictions. And I think people lose sight of that sometimes. A lot of times they're their parents that are struggling with addictions who have kids. They're loved and they have purpose in this life, but they're struggling. And I think we also need to understand and remind some of our listeners, most of them probably already know, but addictions, they stem from trauma, unresolved trauma. And these are people who are broken, who are hurting, and they're numbing out. They're using drugs and alcohol to numb out from trauma, right? So I think when we look at things from that perspective, and if people, more people could open their minds and understand that our addicted loved ones are numbing out from trauma, that it looks a lot different than this mentality and this idea of these people choose this lifestyle. They chose to use drugs. They choose to get drunk every day. There's obviously more to it than that, right? And you and I understand that. And I know probably a lot of our listeners understand that too. But oddly enough, there still are people who really think that addiction is a choice. When, I mean, it's so much bigger than that and so much deeper than that. We have to look at why people are addicted. And I think that's important. I often say recovery is a choice. You can choose to make that choice and commit to that journey. But the addiction itself, when people are just numbing out from unresolved trauma, the stigma really needs to disappear.
Yeah, for sure. And that ties in nicely with asking for help, I find. One of the stats I read over the weekend, it says people that don't come around to ask for help at early stages before it's too late, it's irreversible. It's highly unlikely that even if you do stay sober, you're less likely to continue staying sober in the future. And that also goes with association towards liver diseases as well. So once someone has that, it's hard to reverse from that. And it was tying it in with, again, what's stigma and asking for help. And when I started reading, people, I grew up in a small town. Those of you that don't know my story, they can go back and listen to it. They can go back and listen to Jody's story. And I was always wondered, okay, first of all, alcoholism is for the individual pushing the shopping cart down that back alley. But it's clearly not. A lot of people drink and they have problems, but instead of passing out on the street, they're passing out in their backyard. They might have a fancier roof to go home to that's heated and running water. But it was always like, okay, what if there's a problem with whether it's alcoholism or financial issues or driving home a beater vehicle versus a newer vehicle, what are the people going to think? It was that stigma. And especially when it came to like addiction or drug use, like no one looks at the pharmaceutical side of things, like that someone's addicted to a pill with a prescription versus alcohol. And I know in my town, it was a big deal if someone had a drinking problem, and it was always looked at them, like, because I wasn't educated that it can potentially be a medical disorder or it is a medical disorder. But I always, like 99% of the time, looked at this individual and been like, yeah, he's older. And yeah, that's his lifestyle choice. That's his choice. But not thinking that it could be intergenerational trauma, like you mentioned, something that happened to someone's past.
And more often than not, that isn't the case. You know, trauma is definitely the root of most addictions, if not almost all addictions. It's unresolved pain and people are just numbing out. And we see that all the time here in Thunder Bay. And we've even talked about it here because the drugs are getting even worse here. Supply and so on is getting really dangerous. Like, and an example of like trauma and addiction would be this, right? Like we've got people here in Thunder Bay who are using hard drugs. That's a huge problem here in Thunder Bay for people, right? People know and understand the risks with these drugs. Like they know that they may overdose. They know that they might not wake up, right? But they continue to use them anyhow. And to me, that just speaks volumes to the amount of trauma that some of our friends are carrying. Because honestly, I know people who would probably prefer not to wake up. That's how much pain they're in. And that's the bigger problem. And that's where I think we need to really look for solutions there and try and build these people back up and give them hope and reconnect them with some things that are feeding their purpose, their passions, feeding them as people. And that's where we need to lose the stigma too, because I think a lot of times people who get caught up in that cycle, like this, they know the stigma exists, right? Like they look around, they know people are judging them and the city would just assume they didn't exist and wants to brush them under the rug. It's another hit to their self-esteem too. And it almost spirals them even deeper into that addiction. So stigma is really a dangerous thing. And I think we need to stop looking at addiction that way through that lens and really just start to have some compassion for people and really try and understand why they're in that cycle of addiction and look for real solutions and try and help people get out, because people can heal. We've seen it, AZ. Like, we've seen people who've committed to their healing journeys and gotten out of some really dark places, like really dark places. It can be done, but they need love. They need encouragement. They need resources. They need all those things to do it. They can't do it on their own. When I think dropping the stigma and coming at it from a compassionate viewpoint is a really good step in the right direction to helping people make that first step into recovery.
Definitely. And 100%, Jody, I have an extended family member in the country that's going through something similar. And same thing, it's that whole, okay, not worrying about what other people are going to think. I used to think that way. I used to think that, okay, what if everyone in my family finds out that this guy has a drinking problem? And truth be told, me being a strong drinker, the best thing that's ever happened to me, because I was able to like see clearly, stop drinking, figure out what works for my brain, surround myself with the right community, and just strive and try everything I want to do. And if it's not for me, I go on to the next. And that's my story. That's my story in like a nutshell. But I think by recognizing that when people around us are aware, it can actually lead towards infinite number of resources coming our way to get us help. Because now people around us are aware that we want the help, and we're not being feel like we're targeted, because now I want it. And so what that led when I went through that is, okay, I got off that drug I was doing or that alcohol I was doing. Okay. And that was the number one thing, is you got to get off. You got to either have the right meds on you for a clear mind, or you have to get off of the stuff that you're doing to mood alter. Once that's out of the way, and that might look like detox, for example. But once that's out of the way, then it's like forming that connection, that community. Who do I have in my circle, rehab, my home, wherever I am in the world, that I can figure out a way to integrate myself into society? And I know a friend in the country that the stigma around alcohol use and drinking and driving, for example, he did not want anyone to know that his neighbors, his family, his friends, that he had a drinking and driving charge that's going to not allow him to drive for the next 3 years. And the job involved driving on the highway, but life doesn't wait for those problems. The reality is that the guy might have 2 more years left to go and he'll be back on the road, but life doesn't wait for that. We're too caught in the past. We're too caught in the future. And we're worried about what everyone is thinking around us, that whole stigma piece, rather than focusing on ourselves. The big part, if you look at history and you look at evolution, as adaptation of the human being, we got to learn to adapt and ride with that wave. Otherwise, we're going to be mentally checked out and lost. And to me, when I look at my good friend in the country, call it an extended family member, it's essentially saying, is like, all bullshit aside, the reality is that job's not in the picture right now for the next 2 more years. Find something to fill your time in the interim. You'll be back at it. This is a time to step back, and not even step back, put some resources around you. Try 500 things and 3 might stick, okay? And surround yourself with people, your family, your community, your people that you trust. And if that's not it, there's tons of focus groups and just groups with similar like disorders or whatever's going on mentally that you can access virtually or in person because you live in Toronto. Do you know what I mean? You have resources up the yin yang, and there's no excuse. And then once that's in place, you're living the present. And more importantly, whatever stigma that you have can be the biggest opportunity in disguise, because you'll have people wanting to help you and get you through it. That's what I learned over the years.
Makes good sense. Yeah. Yeah. Again, like just going back to how much pain and trauma some people are like, I had a really interesting perspective when I used to work downtown Fort William, a bird's eye view of some really dark places and some really dark activities happening. And sometimes at work, when I was still working downtown Fort William there, like I'd see, unfortunately I had to see some people overdose. And sometimes I'd see people overdose 2-3 times inside of a 2 or 3 week period. When like, you'd think that would be enough to really make somebody change their mind with their addiction. But I think it's just proof positive again about how much pain and trauma some of these people are carrying, some of our loved ones, right? Because how do you overdose 3 times in 3 weeks and still continue with your addiction? Obviously, that's not a lifestyle. That's trauma. That's trauma because you're using to numb out and you don't care what the consequences are. As a matter of fact, like I said, like some people that are using would just as soon not wake up. And that'd probably be a better outcome for them. And that to me is just tragic and heartbreaking, because it just, again, is proof positive and shows how much pain and trauma some of our loved ones are carrying around. It breaks my heart. Because these are great people. These are people with purpose. These are people with families. There are people who love these people, and they're just hurting so badly that they're willing to play Russian roulette with their lives to get a bit of a break from that pain and trauma by numbing out. That's hard.
And to me, I don't think that's a lifestyle choice. It looks like a disorder, like, because they haven't dealt with certain things in their life. But then it's not just, maybe they don't have the processing ability at this point in their life to deal with it. And so with that, they do need resources around them. But in order for them to do that, they need to withdraw somehow from that drug that they're doing or whatever it is, right? Because you need that clear mind first, which is step one.
Of course. There has to be a realization for anybody who is using. There has to be a realization that I want to stop. And from that point, you have to do some things, get the ball rolling. Probably, I think a lot of times that decision comes while you're still using. Maybe you're fed up. You've just had enough. You're ready to maybe try and work through some of the trauma that you're dealing with. You're ready to maybe try and heal from your addiction. And I think for a lot of our friends, that realization comes while they're still using. But there comes a point where you need some clarity so you can put together a plan, when you can start to look for what resources are out there and really put together an action plan to heal from your addiction. But that's what I was talking about earlier on. And in this recording was that, okay, so somebody has that realization. They're like, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done getting high. I'm done getting drunk. I realize that I've got some trauma that I need to resolve and work through. I'm ready to maybe work on myself and get myself healthy. And then they call detox and they're turned away. And I think that can be even more disheartening, because they're like, you know what? Fuck it. What was I even thinking? Forget about it, man. I'm just going to go back to using. Might as well, because the resources aren't there anyhow. And the same can be true, like, even if they make it past step one, like, maybe eventually they do get into that detox center. Okay, so detox is, come on down, we've got a bed for you. Okay, great. And they sober up safely. They're in that detox center for 6 or 7 days. But when there's no resources immediately at the end of that sober up period, what do you expect is going to happen? Of course, they're going to relapse. If they don't have support at that point in time, they're going to relapse. And that's where I think there is just like gaping holes in the resources here in Thunder Bay. It's crazy. There's got to be a way, when I don't really know what the solution is. Like, maybe some of these pharmaceutical companies need to step up and start coughing up some cash for treatment and for healing centers and recovery centers and so on. But like it really should be as simple as, I'm addicted. I decide that I want to get clean. I call detox. I'm instantly offered a bed. They say, come on right over. We'll hook you up. You get in there. And during those 6 and 7 days, I've got counselors coming up to me, workers coming up to me and offering me resources and saying, look, like, we can send you here. We can send you here. These are the things, these are your options, right? And it should be a smooth transition from that detox center right into, immediately after detoxing, into a treatment center where there are workers and resources that can help you on that next step. And then when that ends, it should be a smooth, easy transition right into an aftercare program or a halfway house. There can't be gaps. There can't be gaping gaps between these steps, because when we've got these gaping gaps, people fall through, they fall through those gaps, and we end up having those cycles of relapses, and people end up back right where they started.
Yeah, no, very interesting stuff that you just mentioned. I've worked in parts of the country where there's infinite resources for communities to go to any rehab program in the country, and they'll pay $30,000 per person to go to a high-end treatment facility. That's if they want it. All they got to do is sign their name on the dotted line. And it doesn't get used as frequently as you would think. And it's not in their hometown, of course. It's these communities are in geographically isolated places in the country. Even sometimes I've seen it when the funding is there, everything's even in favor of an individual going into detox, getting a bed, going into a high-end treatment facility, and then there's aftercare, and then you're set to go. I've seen relapses happen too, even on that end.
Oh, of course.
Do you know what
I mean?
Yeah,
I do. And yeah, I think that's where it hinges on the person's real want and desire to heal from their addiction.
100%.
Before anything, first and foremost, that has to be there. If you're not serious about your recovery, it doesn't matter how many resources are lined up there. If you're not serious about taking advantage of those resources, doing the work, you're going to relapse. So no, I think that's paramount, what you just said there. Like, it doesn't matter what's lined up, because even in situations where the best resources in the world are lined up, if someone in addiction isn't really ready to make those steps and make those positive changes and work on themselves and try and heal themselves from the addiction, they're not going to do it. We've talked about that in previous episodes too. And that's true. You can't court order recovery. You can't force one of your loved ones into recovery. As much as we'd love to save people we care about from their addictions, if someone who's addicted isn't ready, it ain't going to work. It ain't going to work. You can literally pick them up and carry them to the recovery center, but if they're not ready, it ain't going to work. They're going to relapse. That's just how it's going to go. So we've seen that time and time again. The opposite is also true, AZ. Like, we've seen it too, where people show up here at Hell at the Moon for some of our programming and so on. When I see people who they're committed, like they are committed to their healing journeys. You can tell they are, like, they're hustling hard. They're doing the work. They're going to meetings. They're using those resources that are available. Sometimes here in Thunder Bay, they really have to struggle to get access to those resources. And I see these guys really hustling to make sure that they're being proactive in their recoveries. And that's the good news, is that when people are proactive in their recoveries from their addictions, the success rate is, in my opinion, actually pretty high. But that's the threshold, what we were just talking about a few minutes ago. Like, you have to get over the hurdle. Like, you have to be ready. You have to want it. Hmm. When you do, it can be done. But if you're just half-assing it, or someone's trying to force you in, or a judge is making you go do it, it doesn't work like that. That's not how healing works. That's not how recovery works.
Definitely, Jody. And I appreciate having this discussion with you today. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think we had a great discussion there, and appreciate your time today, Z.
Sounds good. A lot to think about. And thanks again, Jody.
Thanks.
As a reminder, episodes are released every Thursday on Spotify, Apple, or visit us at ratracepodcast.com. Please feel free to leave us a review or follow, subscribe to continue joining us on our journey. Thank you so much for listening, and bye for now.